Now am I on? Okay, perfect. Thanks. Last hour, we were dealing with a lot of characteristics about China. And I am from America. I'm an American. And I have to admit, I am very proud of the fact that I am from America. America has, you know, I love my country. And yet I also am obviously very, very much aware of a lot of the negative aspects of my country and my culture. And there's sort of a proper balance between really loving one's country and really understanding one's sort of the negative aspects of things. And I feel that China is almost sort of like my adopted homeland after living there for the last 16 years. And China really has become to me a second home, a place that I love very, very much. And as I talk about China and as we deal with some of the characteristics of China, I never want you to think that I don't have a very strong affection, both for my home country of the United States, but also for my adopted home country of China, because it has a lot of characteristics that I'm very, after living in China for so many years, there are so many reasons why I love to stay there, because there's so many good and positive things about China that I love very much, and it's an incredible privilege to have lived there for the last 16 years and to be able to continue living there, hopefully for another 16 years, because I love China so much. One of the things I didn't talk about during the first hour that I was going to was just a comment about some of the far west of China. There are some areas of far west China where some of the minority peoples live. And I'll be talking later about various crafts, but I have some crafts on the back table. And you'll see those later when we talk about it. But yeah, this session we're going to really sort of delve into. Maybe I will put this in front of me so I can look at you and glance down. I'm not used to this, but anyway. Of professional service ministries. And we were told earlier during the break that OMF stands for... Yeah, unfortunately I tricked you on that one. Today it doesn't actually mean Overseas Missionary Fellowship. It just means OMF International. That's actually the official name now of my organization. And it is that because in many ways missions has gone through, at least in focus of in terms of how we have done mission and bringing the gospel to a place like China, has gone through various stages. In the early days, we were the old China Inland Mission, and we were in central western China, placing missionaries there. 1950, the missionaries were kicked out, which, as I said, was probably a real blessing to the church because the church really became Chinese. It really became indigenous. And OMF sent its missionaries to other countries like South Korea and the Philippines and Thailand and Indonesia and Singapore. But about 15 years ago, the doors began opening up, not for missionaries to go to a place like China, but people who had various professional skills to be able to serve in a place like China. And so OMF wanted to very much help facilitate various people who have professional qualifications to be able to help them go and serve in China. And so Overseas Missionary Fellowship changed its name again to simply OMF International. And so today, OMF International places a number of missionaries in countries like those that I mentioned. But they also help facilitate placing professionals in countries that don't allow missionaries, countries like China, North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Myanmar, even probably many of you, out of curiosity, how many of you are from Malaysia? Okay? A few of you are from Malaysia. And you may not realize this, but it is not permissible for missionaries to go to Malaysia and to reach out to the Malay Muslims. And yet we, the Church of Jesus Christ, still have a responsibility to go and serve in creative ways, in professional ways, to try to be able to share Christian love in a sensitive and legal and appropriate manner in a place like that. And so this is what I've been doing as I've taught and taught on the university campus. As was mentioned, we often don't use nowadays the term tent making. And I think one of the reasons why I've never liked that term is because it means very different things to different people. And as a result, it's not a very helpful term. I don't know how to make tents, so I'm not a tent maker. You know, that's on one point. Some people think of tent making as very much sort of a, as you mentioned, sort of a self-supporting, a way to be able to support yourself, to be able to go. Other times, people may think of the term as being more of sort of getting into a country and pretending to do a job while really being a missionary. And so a tent maker is really sort of like an undercover missionary. You know, somebody who goes into China and sets up a business and maybe, you know, half an hour a month they work on their business and all the rest of the time they're doing missionary work. And so that is sometimes how the term tent making is used. For me, when I use the term professional service, what I'm talking about is somebody who's really doing a job with integrity. Very much like Daniel, not this Daniel, well, hopefully like this Daniel, but the other Daniel in the Old Testament, who I think is obviously a wonderful example of somebody who went to a foreign land. He went to a foreign land and using his profession, working with integrity, he had a tremendous impact for the kingdom of God. Daniel chapter 5, verse 11. There is a man, the writing on the wall, and the king is all upset about the fact that he doesn't know what the handwriting on the wall is. And the queen hears the voices of the kings and the nobles, and he says, "Don't be alarmed. Don't be so pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy God in him. In the time of your fathers, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, I say, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. This man Daniel, whom the king called Belshazzar or something, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams and to explain riddles and to solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means." What a great testimony. This is from the queen. This is from the queen of the kingdom, is turning to the king and saying, you know, there's this man who's a follower of God, and he is, man, what were all those adjectives they used? You know, man of incredible insight and intelligence and wisdom and knowledge and understanding. And that's the type of professional service that I'm talking about here as we go to countries like China. People who really serve with integrity to the point where even the king will acknowledge that God is the true God. Later on, just in the next chapter, because of this, or because of that, and also the scene with the den of lions, the king issues this great decree. And he says, I issue this decree that every part of my kingdom, people must fear and revere the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed, and his kingdom will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the powers of the lion. And so the king in Daniel's time acknowledged that there were that this Daniel was mighty and served with integrity. In China, there are today many, many different ways of serving in China, serving in your professional skill. And I wanted to talk about some of these areas. I often think of them as being sort of five major areas of professional service. One is the need for teachers. Teachers in the universities. People to teach English, teach science, teach engineering, teach agriculture. People often ask me, oh, doesn't the Chinese government persecute you for your faith? You know, oh, you know, it's a communist country. Don't they give you many, many difficulties? And my response is that in China, probably the biggest harassment that the Chinese government gives me is they keep calling me up on the phone asking me for more English teachers for their universities. They call me up and they ask me and they say, you know, last semester you gave us two teachers. Next semester, we'd like those two teachers to stay, but we'd like to have 10 more, please. And so there are incredible opportunities for people to come and teach computer science, teach the sciences, teach English, teach other foreign languages. One of the challenges of the order that I'm doing some of these talks is I want to be able to tell you some stories, but I'm saving my thunder for tonight and tomorrow morning. So I can't tell you all the things that I want to tell you now, so I've got to sort of bite my tongue. But there are incredible ways and means that teaching in the university is an incredible opportunity. There's incredible opportunities for those to come as students. I went to China to study Chinese. And in many ways, going to study Chinese is a great way of going and really giving honor and respect to the Chinese people. The Chinese culture is a rich and proud culture. It has a proud and rich heritage, a long history that is rightfully proud of. And in many ways, it's a little bit embarrassing when Chinese have to learn English. It's sort of like when the French have to learn English. You know, they aren't too happy about that. You know, and there's a little bit of a thinking the world should be speaking French, not English. And probably in many ways the Chinese people feel, and probably rightly so, you know, the world should be speaking Chinese. The Chinese civilization was the pinnacle of civilization several centuries ago. And there's a real pride in that. And so as I go to China and I actually spend time learning Chinese, I learn the language and I talk with people in Chinese so that they don't have to talk to me in English, but I can talk with them in Chinese. It gives them honor, gives them respect. And rightly so. And it's a great way of being able to, obviously also, to be able to show love and affection and honor to a people. Cameron Townsend was obviously famous for going and bringing the gospel in the language and in the tongue of the people that, that you're wanting to communicate the gospel to. And so being able to go to China as a student is an incredible opportunity. Going and working there in business is also an opportunity. With China having now gone into the WTO, there are wonderful opportunities for foreigners to come and do business. Whether it's to start up your own company, whether it's to work for a foreign joint enterprise, whatever it may be, to be able to operate a business in China. During my travels through New Zealand, I was in Nelson, and I met this Chinese foreign student who was preparing. In fact, now he is back. He's back in China now. And as I was talking to him about Christian faith, he turned to me and he says, you know, in many ways, I would like to become a Christian. I think it's probably true and probably good. But I'm going to China to do business. And you can't be a Christian and do business in China. One of the dynamics of China today is there is a lot of corruption. And so people, Chinese businessmen who are Christians are almost, in Chinese culture, it's almost an anomaly. It's almost sort of a contradiction of terms. And so as Christian businessmen go to China and run their business in an ethical, honest way, using integrity as its foundation, is in and of itself is an incredible witness. And it's a great role model for Chinese young people, Chinese businessmen, to be able to model for them how to be a Christian businessman, how to run your business with integrity in a society which, you know, there's corruption and bribery and this type of thing. I think of a friend of mine who has a company. He's hired probably now 500-600 people for his company. And he has found a Chinese brother to be his personnel manager, sort of the spiritual gift of evangelism. And so my friend is able to obviously have opportunities to be able to have this personnel manager for his company regularly meet with all the staff in his company, all the staff in his factory. And he just very naturally is able to share his Christian faith with everybody on the factory floor. Incredible opportunities to be able to have a very powerful Christian witness in China. Another area of professional service is in areas of development, social care. I mentioned these crafts. These crafts are made by Tibetan peoples using yak wool. Sorry, it's not cheap wool from New Zealand. It's yak from Tibet. And when I brought it in, I wasn't even sure if customs were going to allow me to bring it in, but they didn't make me throw it away, so I was glad for that. But friends of mine work up on the Tibetan plateau, being able to help some of the local people be able to learn how to start up their own business, making crafts using own Tibetan style, using products and material that is readily available right there, to be able to help them be able to run and operate a business. There are friends of mine who are working in orphanages. We were talking last hour about the one-child policy. And in China today, many of the orphanages are not filled with orphans when we think of orphans. They're filled with abandoned children, mostly all probably girls. Girls that have been abandoned by parents that don't want them. So I have friends of mine who work in the orphanages in China. When you think about it, these are people who, these children have been thrown away. They've been thrown away in the garbage. And somebody has pulled them out of the garbage and is caring for them in the orphanage. And yet in many ways, they're still viewed as garbage. You found them in the garbage can. You know, mom and dad didn't want them. So when I have friends of mine, Christian friends, who are able to work in this orphanage and to be able to help and care for these small pieces of garbage, which we believe are precious and made in the image of God, and are holy and precious and dear to Him, it's obviously has a huge, you know, contrast in worldview. And you know, why would you do this? Why would you give such honor to something that is worthless? And so being able to model that and to be able to obviously show love in very practical ways. I have a friend of mine who has recently started up a sort of a halfway house for disabled teenagers. A house to be able to train disabled children, teenagers, in having some life skills so that they aren't so sort of dependent upon society, but they can become more independent. And so there are incredible ways to be able to serve in areas of development. Probably the other last way that I often think of that we need people is administrators. So teachers, students, businessmen, development social workers, and finally, administrators. I know writing emails, doing finance, all this sort of type of thing is not very glamorous. You know, if you go to a person, you hear from the person who's, you know, out on the front line and living in the hut and, you know, living in 50 degree weather in the summer and, you know, 50 degree below in the winter and, you know, only has one pair of long johns, and you know, you like to hear those stories. Well, maybe you don't. I sure don't like to live in, that's for sure. But yet reality today, so much time writing emails, dealing with finance, making sure that our organization keeps its charitable standing, handling member care for personnel, dealing with office registrations, all the bureaucracy. We have probably about 100, depending upon how you count it, either 180 or 350 people in China today. You can imagine just to be able to support all those people in those ways takes a lot of administration. And so we need a lot of people just to be able to come in areas of support. In my opinion, probably one of the greatest changes that have happened in the 16 years that I've lived is that there's a changing attitude in China today toward Christians. Ago, to talk with people, it would be a great harassment. I think recognize that the missionaries 100 years ago were often associated with the with who were in trade. And there has been a lot done, you know, bad. And we need to understand that when we go to a place like China. We need to be on our best behavior. You know, if you were to invite me over to your home on Tuesday night for dinner, and by the way, I don't have dinner plans for Tuesday night, so if anybody wants to do that, they can. If anybody wants to invite me over for dinner Tuesday night, you know, I would be on my best behavior. You know, I would be polite. I might bring a gift. Don't count on it if you bring me, if you invite me. You know, I might bring a gift. I'm going to come in and I'm going to behave wisely and politely to you. I'm going to thank you. I'm going to, you know, you're just going to be on your best behavior, right? And so likewise, as I go to China, I'm very much on my best behavior. I'm sensitive to their peoples. I'm obedient to their laws. I want to be honoring to their society and to their way of life. Sorry, I got sidetracked. The greatest change that I've seen in China today is this change in attitude toward Christianity. Today, if you talk to people about Christianity, Many people will say, Christianity is a good thing. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. But it's a good thing. And that's a huge change. That's a huge change from two generations ago where they said Christianity was this opium oppressor of the people. And I believe that's preparing a big groundswell to come to faith in Christ in sort of the upcoming generation. I think in more large part that has to do with people who have gone and taught English in the universities. You have governmental officials who may have a son and a daughter. They may have a daughter who's gone to university in China, who's really by this foreign English teacher who's a Christian. And his daughter comes home every school break and says, wow, you know, this Kiwi teacher from Auckland who's a Christian really has helped me so much in my English. And she's had me over to her home and she threw a Christmas party for our class and just have a wonderful time with her. I've never had a teacher like her. All my other teachers don't pay me nearly as much attention as this foreign teacher who's a Christian. And then he calls up his son who's in New Zealand or maybe he's in Australia, I don't know where he's in. But he calls up his son who's living abroad and says, you know, how are you doing? I'm worried about you. You're there all alone. He says, oh, don't worry. There are lots of people here I had a family who invited me over home last night. And they're a Christian family. And they had me over to their home for a nice meal. And as a result, people are seeing this. And they're seeing people who work in orphanages and who help in very many practical ways. And they're having a change in how they view Christianity. Because of men like Daniel. Men like Daniel who worked with integrity before the king. Men who were known for being honest. Men of integrity. We in China today, we probably, as I said, we have just an incredible need for more teachers. Very practical way. This is going to be my recruitment speech, so if you want to fall asleep, you can. We need people to come for 1 to 3 years to come and teach. Teach English, teach your profession, whatever it may be. You figure to yourself, if China is a country of 1.5 billion people, and New Zealand is a country of 4 million people and 40 million sheep, if New Zealand needs it, China needs it. Probably with the only exception of Chinese language teachers. And even that, we've placed one Chinese language teacher even in China to come, who's been an expert in how to teach Chinese as a foreign language. And even she has come to China from abroad to be able to help teachers in China to know how to teach Chinese. And so we have an incredible needs for teachers. English teachers, science teachers, agriculture teachers, you name it, we need it. We have the opportunity for people to come for 1 to 3 years. There's a brochure on the back table where Angela has set up a series of book tables. There's a purple brochure that I would encourage you to go back there and pick it up. It's a brochure that deals with and introduces and shares some of how to come to China for 1 to 3 years. We obviously need people to come on a long term for 16 years. I realize people aren't ready to sign up for 16 years often. And so we also have an opportunity for people to come for a short term program. And back there on the back table also, there are various brochures to come for just a month to come and experience what life in China is like. As I say, there are incredible needs and opportunities in a place like China. What are your questions? I have more, but what is cost of living like in China? I can go to this is Tukwai. Tukwai is about 40 New Zealand cents. Okay? You can pass it around if you want. I want it back, though. It's 40 cents, 40 New Zealand cents. With that, I can almost buy a bowl of noodles for lunch or dinner. I can usually get around. I can usually probably go someplace on a bus and come back, so a round trip on a bus, local bus, not a long-distance bus, but a local bus. I live in an apartment which is about 100 square meters, which is about 200 New Zealand dollars a month. So. You don't even need to know man to teach computer science. I use English to teach computer science. English has recently become the official second language of China. And so they are wanting more and more instruction to be done in English, whether it's agriculture, whether it's engineering. And so when I come in and teach software engineering, they want me to teach in English. It helps my students to be able to prepare for their job so that they can be equipped to help their company establish foreign contacts, be able to have foreign customers, be able to understand how foreign companies write and develop software, how to be able to negotiate contracts, how to be able to define for customers requirement analysis and specification documents and the redesign, preliminary and detailed design. So they are wanting this technology often taught in English. Many times students graduate, they want to be able to read technical journals, and most of those technical journals are in English. If they want to be able to publish any articles, publishing of those articles would be in English. And so, as I say, I teach in English. I go slowly. I enunciate my words carefully. To the point now that when I go back to the United States, everybody always says, "Why do you talk so slowly?" So there are opportunities to obviously teach. Obviously, I think teaching English or learning some Chinese is very, very valuable. I had a friend of mine, they, about 55 years old, have put their kids through college, paid off their mortgage from the United States, and they came to China as a 55-year-old to learn Chinese and to be able to teach. They studied for 1 year, and it was hard going. Children just naturally learn languages. We old fogies, it's hard. I have friends of mine who, they go to China and they go to class every day from, 3 hours a day every morning. And they spend time with their tutor in the afternoon. And they have two kids, and their kids just go play every afternoon. And at the end of 2 years, their kids speak fluent Chinese and, mom and dad are still struggling with it. It just ain't fair. It just ain't fair. So learning Chinese, anyway, I got off on that. What was your question again? I was going someplace with that. So it obviously is helpful to know Mandarin. Because you end up... Oh, I know where I was going. I was telling the story about Glenn. It's obviously helpful to know some Chinese, just to be able to go out and about. This friend of mine, they studied for a year, and then they began teaching English. And they commented to me recently when I saw them. They said that 3 years ago when we left the United States to go to China, it was the hardest thing we ever did in our lives. to pack up, sell our house, to go to China. It was so hard. But he said to me, now as we prepare to go back and leave China and go back to the U.S. for 6 months, that's now the newest, hardest thing. They have had such the time of their life as they have lived and worked in China. And so, you know, they don't know a lot of Chinese. They can get around. They can get taxis, you know, so they aren't afraid to get lost. I remember my first year in China, always afraid to take any public bus anywhere. I was afraid I was going to get on a bus. It was going to be the wrong bus and take me someplace, and I couldn't get back, and I'd be there for the next 40 years, you know, and I couldn't get back home, you know. But, you know, they've learned enough Chinese now just to feel comfortable. One of the things that we have done, the question was how about the rural areas? Definitely the greatest areas is in the cities. There's no doubt about that. The cities are where the universities are. And if it's not the big major cities, at least it's the medium-sized cities. I mean, like in, you know, some of these medium-sized cities would be, you know, 2 million people, you know, in provinces. So, I mean, they're still sizable. It's just in China, they're not big, you know. But there would be some opportunities in there, but there wouldn't be probably a lot of opportunities, you know, to run a business in real rural areas. Although I do have a friend of mine, he has started up a farm. He's opened up a farm in the far west of China, and is manufacturing, growing a fruit. And is using that as his business, and so there would be ways, but yeah, most of them would be in the cities. And I've talked mostly about education because that's my background, that's my heart, that's my passion. You know, I come in the beginning of every semester, and I walk into class, and I have 200 students who are ready and willing to, you know, hear my beck and call, and to hear and listen to me. And so I see the real value in teaching. There's enormous benefit of coming in as a teacher. But there are opportunities in other areas. Mostly university. There is some for secondary. I'm sorry. Jonathan, you should have reminded me. Video, showtime. Wake up back there.
In China, the sleeping dragon and its population of more than 1.3 billion people has awakened. In the 21st economically
Any other questions while they figure this out? They're detecting. No detection. Okay. Any other questions? Yep.
Politically.
Documentation. I mean, every time you end up getting a job at a university or anything like that, they obviously will arrange your visa and your paperwork that you need. And so that's obviously, any business would obviously, if they hire a foreigner, they would obviously have the means and the ability to be able to hire them and have them have a visa. So. Safety for children and health care. Children. I personally can't think of a better place to raise kids than to raise them abroad. I know many people may think, oh, you know, it's such a sacrifice to take them out of here. And, you know, what are they missing? I have a friend of mine who is Swedish. They've lived up in the far northwest of China in Xinjiang. They have about 3-4 kids. Their kids now at age 12, 10, and 8 know Swedish, Norwegian, English, Chinese, and Uyghur, the local dialect, the local minority language. They're fluent in 5 languages at age 11, 12. They've been able to see the world and just be able to be exposed to so many things. And so I just can't imagine a more wonderful place to raise children than to be able to raise them abroad. Okay? Yeah, you know, they're not able to play with their cousins and play soccer or whatever it is that they do back here and watch TV 5 hours every day. But those are the negative aspects, if you call those negative aspects. You know, healthcare is an issue. We have everybody in our organization who's required to have evacuation insurance so that they don't, so if they do run into a medical emergency, we can arrange for evacuation for them. Because the healthcare is, you know, probably not up to Western standards, and so that's one of the things that we make sure that people have. Those types of things are taken care of. We ready to go? Yes? Yes? Okay. So hang on to your question.
It's the dawn of a new era in China. The sleeping dragon and its population of more than 1.3 billion people has awakened in the 21st century. Economically, politically, culturally, and spiritually. Steeped in history, the old and new faces of China settle side by side. As a melting pot of peoples and religions propel this country forward, many are at a crossroads.
I think one of the things that's kept me interested here is just the rate of change. Sometimes people ask me about my job, I say it's just Monday through Friday chaos. There's always something new, there's a tremendous amount of change going on, and a lot of that change creates opportunities for people to come in contact with God.
Whether it's in business circles, academic fields, or meeting social needs, the opportunities for serving are as diverse as they are exciting. For some, their path is taking them to the workplace where they share the gospel through their values, words, and actions.
Jesus says, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And I've got over 1,000 employees in my company, and there's lots of weddings, there's lots of births. I go to visit people in hospital and I talk with them, I ask if I can pray for them, and 99% of the time they're very happy about that. they're just very moved to think that a general manager of a big company would come to visit them and be concerned about them. The underlying thing is really, can you love the people?
For others, school and university environments are the ideal channels for serving both through teaching and building relationships.
I've taught in different colleges back in America, and I never experienced the opportunity to bring the Bible into my class as a textbook and have students actually excited about the stories and the events that they're reading in it.
Eager students of all ages aren't hard to find.
I want to learn English very well.
Christian workers are also reaching out to help local youth and orphanages. In addition to giving youngsters baths, feeding them, and offering much-needed love, workers also touch the disabled.
We're talking about needs for physiotherapists, occupational therapists, people with special education backgrounds, speech therapists. All this area of rehab and special education is a great need, and we hope that we can place lots of people in the future in this area.
There are more than 150,000 children living on the streets of China. The government has started community outreach programs, and it hopes that volunteers will come and assist in the establishment of rehabilitation resources. Christian workers also are equipping local believers to serve China's needy. It's not always easy, but those who take the plunge to serve the people of China learn as much as they teach.
If people want to come to China, obviously we welcome them very much. It's important that they are aware of that it will be difficult. First of all, you have the cultural adaptation, getting used to a totally different culture. If you don't have language, that obviously is a struggle. The main thing is that you walk closely with Father, because he's the one who can give the strength and the perseverance that we need, and the love, of course, for the people.
The opportunities for serving are numerous in this ever-changing land. This is one of the most exciting times in China's colorful history. Workers are wanted and welcomed.
We really welcome English teachers, particularly people who are well enough trained to be able to train English teachers. Beyond that, people who are able to train in business skills, people who have leadership training. Anyone who's willing to come and share the skills that they have, we can find a niche for them.
There are 1.3 billion people in China. We cannot reach 1.3 billion people, but if we can reach people who will reach others, then it is a task that can actually be accomplished in our generation, I believe.
Come to China!
I'm not getting a no, so. Question is sort of the difficulties or the pluses minuses of being with an organization. I think going to China by yourself is going to be really is difficult. I mean, going to China with a group, with support structures, people who are there to give me orientation, to be able to have a built-in structure, to be able to have fellowship, encouragement, accountability, all that kind of thing is it's even with all of that, it's hard. That's pretty much one and the same. I mean, there's not much of a difference there. But as far as OMF helps facilitate those who go, and then there would be those who would be sort of completely independent. I mean, obviously, there's lots of organizations that help facilitate people to go to China. I personally think that there are a lot of advantages of going with an organization. You get the training, the help from other people. You get the care, the equipping. I know of people who have gone to China by themselves, and they really plan on being there for a long time. They want to be there independently, and they're there for 1 year, 2 years, and they go home. Because I think being part of a group is very, very valuable, whether it's our organization or another organization. Let me, just before I get shut down, let me really emphasize to you again that the significance of words. And so I would really encourage you, as you think about China, to make sure that you are using the right words. And so as you go to work on Monday and you talk to people, tell them, you know, wow, I went to church this weekend and I met this Christian Christian from America who's teaching on the university campus in China, who's having an incredible witness for Christ and is able to really help share his faith and really help his students in computer science. You see how that contrasts with, I went to church this weekend and heard a missionary from China. Oh, that's right, he wasn't really a missionary from China, but, well, he's sort of a missionary from China. Well, I don't know if he was or not. So try to use the right terms when you're thinking about China. Because as I say, I am not a missionary. I'll be talking about this later tonight and tomorrow. But try to be thinking of me, even as you're here this weekend, as this computer science teacher, this American teacher who loves the Lord, loves to share his faith. But I'm a computer science teacher. If you had a little video camera and you videotaped me for the last, 16 years of my life, and you person asked you, you saw this video, and then somebody says, what does he do for a living? You'd say, oh, he's a computer science teacher. Is he a missionary? No. Does he love the Lord? Absolutely. Does he love to share his faith? Absolutely. Is he a missionary? No. He's a computer science teacher. And when I worked at Boeing Aircraft in Southern California, nobody ever turned to me and said, wink, 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 oh yeah, you're there at Boeing, but we know why you're really there. No, I was really there to write quality software. I really wanted to share my faith, and I had opportunities to share my faith with my colleagues and with my coworkers. But nobody ever went, wink, 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 oh yeah, you're a missionary to Boeing Aircraft. So does that make sense? I really want you to, you may think I'm on a soapbox, but I think it's an important distinction, especially in relationship to China. So, okay.
Where'd Kenny go? He took off. Well, we do have some supper prepared in the back until 7 o'clock, so you guys got to eat very fast tonight. So I'm going to...
It's because I'm long-winded.
I'm going to ask, Hindra, would you pray for the food and ask God's blessing upon our fellowship? Thank you.